What's up? Is your boy's Jordan and Abraham? He's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend. And I'm an MD PhD student, so that makes me your smart friend. But most importantly, we are your friends who read One Piece. It's early in the morning when we're recording this, and
Yeah,
I'm
man,
tired.
look at this guy, man.
I'm
This
tired.
guy
I'm
looking
tired,
real
Jordan.
tired, man. This guy
I'm
looking
tired.
real tired, man. We got some busy schedules going on, so we gotta go early in the morning. And you can hear in my voice the chipperness of a true morning person. I woke up, I'm ready to go. Abraham, you seem a little more tired, man. You gonna make it through this thing?
I'll say you are, an hour ahead of me. So, technically you could have got like an hour, you got to wake up an hour later than I did.
Hey, listen. No matter what time, it's when I get up in the morning like this, I'm gonna be just fine. I might get tired later in the day. But I remember because I used to always see these morning person memes, right? You know the ones where it's like, oh my God, here's how annoying morning people are. Like you wake up and you're like,
I've never seen them, but I believe it.
I used to see it. It's basically someone being like, why I hate morning people. And the morning person is like early in the morning and they're just like jacked up and ready to go. And I never like really fully got it. And then I hooked up with this girl who was definitely not a morning person. And it was like we woke up the next day and I was like, hey, what's up? What's going on? What's up? How are you? Like, and she's literally just like so groggy, just like, I don't know. Like she had like no capacity to like talk or like function or anything. Next couple times we hung out, had to calm it down a little bit.
Bro, to you, morning person is about how you are when you wake up, not how early you wake up. Like, 'cause I'm
Yeah,
sure
because.
this girl, if she woke up, you're saying if you guys just stayed out until like 5 a.m. and you guys slept in until like 2, she would still be like that when she woke up, right? So you'd still be like, she's not a morning person, even though she's like, it's not the morning.
Yeah, well, that's obviously like an extenuating circumstance because that's not like a period of time when that's like we went out and did some crazy thing, right? So like, it's not like that's your normal routine, but it's sort of like when you wake up in the morning, how kind of ready, salient, ready to go are you for the day? For example, I think a lot of people who aren't morning people could, if you have a 5 a.m. flight to catch or 6 a.m. flight, you gotta get to the airport at like 4:30 or whatever, you're gonna be able to get up, you're still gonna be able to get yourself to the airport, you're gonna be able to function well enough, but you're not gonna be super like you're not gonna be like thrilled about that. Whereas for me, I can get up and do that and that's like, no problem. I'll be fully clear. I could like do work and be perfect and be 100% effective.
Feel different.
And that's almost the ideal time for me. Is like when I first wake up to like wake up, get stuff done. Now I'm thinking clearly, and then I can go on to other stuff.
I thought everybody like that was just like on coffee or something. Like, I don't drink coffee. So I was like, I can get up, I can do everything that they do,
Nah. I mean, you can, but you just might rather do it a couple hours later, right? For me, like when I get to like, 8, 9 p.m., I start really falling off seriously. But like when I was studying Japanese, the best time for me to actually be effective would be like I wake up, roll out of bed, 7 o'clock. Doesn't really fine as long as I'm not in like 4 hours of sleep, right? Like if I'm on any, even if I'm on short sleep, that's when I'm thinking most clearly able to get things done.
Well,
Well, can everyone tell, man? We gotta.
you learn something new every day. I feel like I like that definition of a morning person, and I guess I used to think that I was like, yeah, I'm a morning person. I'm also an afternoon person. I'm an evening person. I'll hang out because if I go on a trip with friends or whatever, right? Like, moment I wake up, first thing I want to do is just like play board games and hang out with people and whatnot. But I'm definitely it definitely takes me a couple minutes at least to get going,
Yeah, man, you don't have this bright, joyous feeling that I do right now because it's the morning. Amen. But as I'm sure everyone can tell by now, we got a lot of we got a lot to talk about because we got 3 weeks on break, so we gotta fill this time. We've been hinting at some stuff, some conversations we want to have more. I think we can get into a little bit of that. What do you think?
First thing I want to talk to you about is, because we didn't really get to go into it last chapter, I want to talk about power scaling. There was a lot of power scaling that we got in chapter 11-11. And some things that made sense, some things that didn't quite make sense to me. I think these last two chapters especially have just been more combat centric, especially with respect to the Gorosei. And I feel like a lot of us in the community are having trouble framing how strong we think they are exactly. And then also Zoro as well. I feel like there are wildly different expectations for how strong Zoro should be at this point. And I think the general sentiment to his fight with Lucci has been disappointment, but I don't know. How do you feel about some of the power scaling that we've got recently?
Yeah, man, we can do it one by one. There's the Elder Stars. I like saying it in English because I speak Japanese, so I'm like, I don't want to just, do the Japanese like that. You know what I'm saying? But we got the Elder Stars. We got Zoro and versus Lucci. We got Kizaru is something that is continuing to pop up, especially in this last chapter. With him seeming to demonstrate some amount of emotional, potentially conflict with the whole thing. But I think the Elder Stars are definitely the most interesting piece of this, just because they've been shown as a final boss of sorts for such a long time that in the traditional shonen archetype, they just kind of have to be stronger than everyone that's come before them. And in some ways, they are. Clearly, they have some kind of power of regeneration, regenerative, whatever. Yeah, they have some regenerative power that allows them to take basically just be massive damage tanks and continue to regenerate from that, even when the damage is from their own from their own attacks. So it's sort of interesting seeing that, but we also don't quite know how strong their offensive power is compared to someone like a Kaido or a Big Mom. A Shanks or even a Luffy at this point, right? And that's what I think the most interesting question is.
I guess my expectation was never that they would be kind of stronger than an emperor or an emperor level. Just even though you're right in shonen, that traditionally is how it goes, right? The villains are scaled up in that sense. Just because we know that so much of the balance of the world is maintained by these different powers, right? We have the emperors, we have the marines, and the marines represent like the military force of the world government, essentially, right? And while, so I just think that if the Gorosei could actually fight like that, that pirates essentially wouldn't exist. If each of these Gorosei was as strong as like a Kaido, that they would have just snuffed out this whole all of these emperors. They would control all the territory. Like, we know that the world is kept in balance by these powers that exist, right? And maybe, the argument is just that they don't want people, they don't want Egghead Island incidents all over the world, which would make sense as to why they're not like out here fighting Yonko Cruz and whatnot.
And
But I
well,
guess
listen, remember, Vegapunk's reveal is part of the Egghead Island incident. Not just them getting defeated and whatnot, but I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on, like, do you not think that part of this could be because they see everyone else as insects? It's not even worth bothering to actually come down and take control of the world?
No, because we do see that like from time to time, they clearly do care about maintaining their position in the world, like their standing in the world, right? That's why they occasionally have like these great exterminations. That's why they promote all the propaganda that they do. That's why they like Professor Clover was killed, all this kind of stuff, right? So while they don't actually care about the humans, I think they do care about their standing in the world, and pirates are clearly the biggest threat to the re like the reappearance of the ancient kingdom and whatnot, right? That's why what Roger did was so dangerous at at his death, right? So it just feels like if they were strong enough to, if they were each as strong as an emperor, that these emperor crews wouldn't exist because the Gorosei would snuff them out.
Well, I'll say that when we talk about the balance of the world, though, we're talking about the balance of the world for I don't know if you like if you want to say humans or like regular humans, like whatever you want to call them. We're talking about the balance of the world between these different warring factions of humans. The idea that the Elder Stars and the, you know, the world nobles, et cetera, don't have anything to hide or preserve. Like obviously that's untrue, but like what you're saying, they have something that they need to preserve, and that's probably in part what Vegapunk's reveal is going to actually shake up about the world. But to me, the strength, them being as strong as an emperor, they don't necessarily have to care about the politics of pirates versus the marines versus like who has all these different territories. They just and that but that's why in my opinion they would come in and kind of do their erasing islands thing is because they need to make sure that they're able to continue their status and have their secrets not be revealed. So they take precautions to make sure that the ancient kingdom's not revealed, other secrets are not revealed. But as far as like pirates going on doing whatever they want, like I don't think they care about that.
I mean, I think they do because I mean, there's been a lot of suggestions that the ancient kingdom was a kingdom of pirates that they like. I think it's
Man, there were
pretty
no
clear.
pirates 800 years ago. Come on now.
What? I mean,
Come on,
if you don't
we had
believe,
no
look,
pirates
there's
800 years ago, bro. Come on. But it
why couldn't there have been
wasn't
pirates 800 years ago?
the great age of piracy anyway. It wasn't a kingdom of pirates. Come on,
Oh,
you
okay,
can't
but
have a
that's
bro. Come
different.
on,
The
you can't have
great
a
age
whole
of pirates
kingdom.
is different from there being pirates. Regardless, okay,
Yeah,
you
bro, it's
could
not gonna be a
we
whole kingdom of pirates. Whoever said that.
I can pick one of these the community theories that are out there about this for next week's S class versus F
I
class
want you to
episode.
bring that next week. I want you to
Because
bring that.
there's a number of people that feel this way, and I think there's a good amount of evidence that would support that theory. But regardless, even if we don't want to talk historically, if we just want to talk about in the present day, I guess my point is just that the Marines are a tool of the world government, right? That they are the
Right.
military arm of the world government, right? They don't really have to worry about the Marines going in, looking at the poneglyphs, trying to discover the secrets of the ancient kingdom, right? The people that they care the people that they care about that they think can compromise their position are obviously the revolutionaries and pirates, right? And yeah, so to me it just I think if they were as strong as an emperor, that this great age of pirates would have been snuffed out much earlier than it was. But I could be wrong. It could just be that, you know, like all of these Marines that have seen Saturn that didn't die, like, you know, because I feel like there
Right.
were some of the upper Marines like that saw Saturn that didn't die. It's just like, you know, are you really going to be able to keep all of this like info safe? Like, is it really not going to get out that these Gorosei have these demonic forms and whatnot? I think it would be a lot harder for them to conceal their identity if they were going out here wiping out Yonko crews. So
I'll say
that like that as an yeah.
I don't think that's what they're so concerned with, right? I don't think that they're that the thing that they're worried about is that people know that they can turn into freaking sandworms from Dune and like demon birds and like boars and whatever. Like that's not what I think they're concerned with.
Yeah, I mean, but in my head, I guess the reason why I think it would be a concern to them is people become much easier to rule and oppress if they don't know they're being oppressed, right? If
Right.
the government has this image of a protective organization run by these humans who, you know, sit atop the red line and blah, 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 you know, protect us from pirates, do all this stuff. Yeah, sure, you know, we have to pay our taxes, and yeah, the Celestial Dragons are complete pieces of shit, but
Right.
it's better than being ransacked by pirates, right? But all of a sudden, if you're like, this world government is run by these, you know, demons, like, I just think you're going to have so so you're going to incite so much more revolution than you would if you were to kind of if you were able to maintain the image that they currently have. That's the only reason that I think that. But regardless, I say all of this to say I never quite scaled them up to like Yonko level. To me, they were somewhere like these Gorosei have been somewhere between Kizaru and Kaido, right? Closer to in my head, closer to Kizaru than Kaido, so I like slightly stronger than whatever you want to call admiral level, even though I don't think all these admirals are the same strength. But with each passing chapter, the lack of offensive capabilities, like you were saying, does have me concerned that maybe these are just damaged. I like to think that with the Conqueror's Haki that they Mercury just displayed this last chapter, and the fact that they are Imu's subordinates, that they will have like actual offensive firepower to back up their status. But so far, all we have really seen from them is that they can take hits like nobody else, right? So
And I'll
that
say
kind of,
I'm not so
yeah.
concerned by them not being able to hit Luffy as far as their offensive capabilities, right? But
Yeah.
it doesn't even seem like they've really like clearly if the baseball bat thing had hit all the giants, they would have created some amount of damage. But like they haven't even really hurt the giants, right? Like yes, they're stronger than Pacifista. Venus Jiro was just like running through in this little smile looking centaur form. Freezing them, but they haven't demonstrated the ability to hurt any person who's particularly strong. So, like, I guess it's an interesting, like, that's one thing that I think that One Piece has traditionally, basically until Wano, done a really good job of, right? It's like for the characters who appear who are actually too strong for Luffy to fight at that point in time, we get kind of fun, creative reasons that we're able to beat them. Take Enel, for example, who is, obviously, 500 million bounty if he was in the Blue Sea, they say.
Yeah.
And because Luffy is rubber, he ends up being able to beat him, right? In
Yeah.
this case, I think you're ending up with a situation where it's just instead of just being classic, where it's in Dragon Ball, it's like as someone gets stronger, they're just like stronger and that's it. But we're getting interesting, I guess, mix-ups, like interesting, more complex traits to the nature of their power that might make it so that make it interesting to think about how we might eventually beat them, what they might need, what we might need to be able to defeat them.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we're going to get that answer when we get Vegapunk's reveal. If there's something, I don't know if I
Yeah,
expect
maybe.
that, but if we,
I'm
but it would
not
be
cons
interesting to get that answer.
Yeah, I'm not so concerned about their performance against Dory and Brogy yet, because it doesn't seem like up until this point they've actually prioritized trying to attack them. Like obviously we see the giants coming and cut off Jupiter's head start, right? And like they didn't even realize they, I mean, maybe they realized the giants were there, but they clearly were just focusing on Luffy during that scene. And then you have like the shields falling. I can't remember exactly what it was, but the shield thing where they block the attack. Like all of these things are focused on Luffy. And then eventually either Saturn or Mercury is like, hey, look, if you guys keep getting in our way, we're gonna have to wipe you out. So it could just be that, you know, in the next chapter or two, they're actually going to be like, let's get these giants. Let's deal with these giants as well. Because
Well, we'll see. The hockey is
they're clearly
definitely an
being ignored,
interesting factor.
right? Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
And it
The
doesn't
hockey.
help that we don't have much in to determine how strong Dory and Brogy are as well, right? Because we haven't seen them since Little Garden. So
But we
it's
have
hard to
seen
know
them.
exactly how strong they are.
But we have seen them kill a sea king, which is pretty easily, which is a feat that we don't, that we haven't seen from many people who are not pretty strong within the series.
Yeah.
Basically, just them,
So,
FPG, and someone else.
yeah. What about Zoro? Where does Zoro stack? Or do you want to do Kizaru first? Which one do you want to
We
do?
can we go with Zora. That's what works for me.
Okay. Where does Zoro stack up for you? In terms of, yeah, just Do you think he's more Yonko Commander level right now? Do you think he's creeping closer to someone like like a Big Mom, a Kai, you know what I mean? Is he closer to a king, or is he closer to like a Kaido for you know?
Man,
Or
I don't know, but I know I want to believe he's closer to a Kaido, so I'm gonna say that. I know I didn't see King use Conqueror's Haki, so that's all
Yeah,
I'm
I
saying.
mean,
And
King had a deep bag though. King had a really, really deep bag that he was getting into, and he
he
was a
did,
Lunarian.
man. And he also had that hilarious "I got a poop face" every time he did that.
Yeah.
Every time he pulled his face down, it made me really have to take a dump so bad. But
Yeah.
yeah, like I'm definitely concerned by that. It seems to have taken him a fair amount of effort to just like knock Lucci out here. Now, once
Yeah.
again, we talked about this before. I think he does sandbag his fights a little bit, and it seems like in the moment he decided that he was going to get serious, he was able to finish Lucci once he decided to use a stronger move. How, like, he also even in his dialogue implied that he was just in control of the fight the whole time, and so Lucci was the one who Lucci was never kind of in control. He was kind of always at Zoro's will, according to Zoro. But it's clear that we don't have a feat that demonstrates that he should be able to fight someone at either emperor or even necessarily admiral level to this point, because Lucci is probably not at admiral level either.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that at least, well, I can only talk about my own expectations, right? My own expectations, leaving Wano, getting into Egghead, I thought that Zoro had scaled up a little bit past King, and that, if we had to run up on the Beast Pirates again at this moment, that he would be closer to Kaido than he is to King. But I can't feel that way anymore, right?
Right.
I can't look at his fight against Lucci and be that impressed by. Here's how I think is a better way to scale it. Because there's times in the story where Oda depicts Zoro to be much closer to Luffy than anyone else, like on the
Right.
rooftop in Wano, right?
Right.
But
Right.
then there's also times where he depicts Sanji and Zoro to be very close to one another in terms of combat strength.
Right.
And he can be a little bit inconsistent with that too in the story. He'll jump back and forth between, how he scales Zoro essentially between these two characters. And right now it just feels like him and Sanji are not actually that far apart from one another in terms of strength. And I mean, we talked about Zoro sandbagging this fight and whatnot, and I disagree with it. I think he's got a long history of not taking his enemies lightly and ending things quickly, and I don't the only reason why I can I the only reason that I can think of for why he kind of took his time with Lucci was that we need I mean, either Lucci is stronger than we're giving him credit for, slash Zoro isn't as strong as we're giving him credit for, or that Oda kind of wanted to occupy Zoro until all of this stuff with the five Gorosei was happening, and so he kind of extended that fight longer than it needed to be. But
Was definitely worth
regardless,
saying that. Definitely worth saying in the way that in Wano, Zoro's on the roof with Luffy. We also don't even see Sanji really get a fight. Now, Zoro didn't even really get a fight, right? Like, Lucci was like basically it was like 80% off screen. Maybe just like showing that it was happening, and then next thing you know, when Zoro decides to end it, he's ended it. But in that way, kind of like what you're saying, Oda is still showing us that he's closer to Luffy than anyone else, and that he's the only other person who actually ends up like fighting someone strong
But
in
then
Egghead.
later on in Wano, there's the whole chapter about the two wings of the Pirate King, and you just get this back and you're like a back and forth between Zoro, Sanji, Zoro's, and we see their opponent. And obviously, Zoro fights the stronger opponent because Zoro is a bit stronger than Sanji, right? But like, I think even within Wano, you have that point on the rooftop where Zoro is again treated more similarly to Luffy. But then there's another point where Oda's like, well, actually, these two are both the wings of the pirate, right?
But I think that's in some ways just respect towards, hey, like he has two really strong commanders, right? Like it's like Big Mom, Katakuri not the same level as Smoothie and Cracker. Like Cracker was way easier to beat, and that's still one of the what like four sweet commanders. Am I getting that right? In like Jack is one of the all-stars, and he's still a lot weaker than someone like King or even Queen. And so in the same way, the idea that you're saying we have the two wings of the Pirate King, that doesn't necessarily, or the future Pirate King, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're the same level. To me, that just sort of means in the same way as the All-Stars, the same way as the Sweet Commanders, that that's those are Luffy's most trusted, longest running. Obviously Jinbei would be in there, it thematically at this point. But that's just saying that that's the kind of like rank of those guys, of like the people who are strong, who are on this group, that's them. That don't mean they're the same though.
Yeah, I mean, I can point to a number of examples in the story, though. Like Little Garden, now that we have Dory and Baragi back, right? Little Garden's a great example, right? The whole thing about the hunting contest between Zoro and Sanji, where there are a number of arcs throughout the story, and again, that was a long time ago, right? And but
It
it's a
was.
trope that has repeated, right? Where Oda occasion and I'm not, he occasionally likes to just compare these two and be like, look at these two, and that is the
I
comparison.
mean,
Where it's like,
bro,
yeah,
it's like they're having a
occasion,
hunting contest, bro. Like, we can be reading
yeah.
into the hunting contest just to be like, oh, that means that in
No,
chapter
but it's
1100,
okay.
they're like around the same level.
Bro, you're not listening. My point is not about a hunting contest. My point is, like, I can't just, I'm not going to go through every single arc and try and find every example of this, but my point is that there's a number of times in One Piece where Oda likes to draw the attention to Zoro versus Sanji and highlight that comparison, and almost to give the impression that they are close. If we wanted to have, let's say, I don't even want to say rivals, but if we were in terms of like power scaling the people on the crew, that Zoro and Sanji would be like 2A and 2B. But then there are times in the story, like on the rooftop, where we're given the impression that no, it's really more of like a 1A, 1B with Luffy and Zoro, with Sanji being like a more distant 2 or 3 or whatever you want to call it. And I guess my point is just that Oda's depiction of Zoro can kind of change a little bit arc to arc. And in this arc, he seems to be portraying Zoro a little bit closer to Sanji than he does to Luffy. Like we see Luffy low diffing and just toying with Lucci, an opponent that you want to headcanon why Zoro was struggling a little bit, but he did take time to defeat him, right? We see during the same arc, Luffy fighting against like three Gorosei at the same time, a Gorosei and an Admiral at the same time. Zoro clearly doesn't scale to that, right? So I guess my point is that in this arc, Oda is depicting Zoro as being closer to Sanji in terms of strength, at least in my opinion.
I think that things have gotten a little bit out of whack anyway since Luffy's level up all the way to Nika, Sangha, whatever. Like I think that's part of it, is the difference between when we were on the roof versus now. Like no one has scaled up so ridiculously as ridiculously, because the most ridiculous power in the world. No one has scaled up as ridiculously as Luffy has, right? Like the scales of, like, remember he was getting, he got low diff by Kaido like basically three times, and then he just came back and was like toying with Kaido and ended up just punching him into the ground. So I think to this point, right, it's not like we ever had a bounty where Zoro was higher than Sanji, or Sanji was higher than Zoro. Like I understand what you're saying as far as thematically, the two of them being shown together, but I think that's mostly just like a plot device. In the same way that like we see Nami, Chopper, and Usopp and like Scared Squad all together, and they're kind of compared. But we also know that it probably goes Chopper, Nami, Usopp, with Usopp having some special abilities.
Okay. Last person I want to talk about before we move on to S class and F class is Kizaru. And Kizaru is someone that I actually think we have a lot of information for in terms of strength and power scaling. But the question, I guess, in this arc is how seriously his heart is into it with respect to the combat, right? We see him getting toyed by Luffy. Bro, Luffy used him and Saturn as like a drum set and just like boom, smashed it together. Like, I feel like you should lose your ad if any pirate does that to you, you automatically lose your admiral status.
Bro, but it's the
Like,
most ridiculous power, bro. It's different. It's different when it's the ridiculous power.
yeah. I've
Yeah.
personally been of the opinion that we know how strong, like, if we want to say Kizaru is kind of, you know, Ben Beckman, we scales to kind of Ben Beckman. He's a very powerful character. He has a broken devil fruit. And to me, that has made the feats that Luffy accomplished in Egghead to this point all that more hype and exciting. Because, like, how high does Luffy scale if he can defeat this admiral that we've seen all these feats for while also fighting a Gorosei, right? But I think a lot of people, in terms of their power scaling, have more been like, well, I don't expect Luffy to be as strong as he's being depicted. So the reasonable expectation maybe is that Kizaru is not fighting at full strength because he's compromised from his relationships with people like Vegapunk and Sentomaru. You know what I mean?
I am inclined to believe at this point that that is at least somewhat the case. I think that we have seen over the course of this arc, even from his initial interaction with Sentomaru, from going through the flashback and seeing Vegapunk, Sentomaru, Bonnie, all of them kind of, you know, smiling, laughing. I mean, he's in a panel where they're doing the Nika dance, for God's sake. Like you can't be in the panel doing the Nika dance and just
He
be a
didn't know
guy
he
who
was doing. He didn't know he was doing.
Hey,
He was
listen,
just
man.
dancing, Jordan.
Hey,
He was
listen,
just dancing.
Oda depicted him in a panel where they're all doing the Nika dance, and I just don't think that you can have someone shown in this arc who's going to be a primary villain of the series doing the Nika dance. I don't believe it. And so to me, I think we've seen so much from him. Remarking that he's going to be embarrassed from probably crying because of his, you know, talking about his glasses or whatever he was saying. In this one, sort of just being in this in 11-11, just sort of being like, what was it he said again?
1, 2, 3, Cancun.
Yeah, man, I had a dream about that actually. I meant to say that. Yeah, he says,
No,
"My wounds run
he's
deep."
he yeah, he basically is like, I'm too tired, I'm done, just get me out of here.
Yeah, like so
Basically.
it really doesn't seem like his heart is in it. I think it's just a question of how much and how significant that reluctance is for him.
Yeah, so I've pushed, I'm starting to come around to that a little bit. I'm still not fully on board with this
Come on,
this
man.
last
Hey, the water's great. The water's great, boy.
yeah with this last chapter, right? Where he's just like, I'm done, right? It doesn't, and he could just have gotten his ass beat and just been like, bro, I can't do it, you know, I'm finished.
Right.
But this whole time, the reason why I've been reluctant to accept the explanation that his heart is not in it, because the comparison that people have been using is Garp at Marineford, right? That's the comparison that people in our group chat have been using. I feel like people in the One Piece community have been using in general to justify, I guess, nerfing Kizaru. And my point was that Garp in Marineford literally did nothing. He couldn't. He was frozen into inaction because he didn't want to do his duty. Whereas Kizaru was literally the one to give the finishing blow to Vegapunk. Like, say what you will, he did carry out his mission and He did kill his friend, and he was ready to kill. I think it was both Kuma and Bonnie too. If I think Sanji hadn't stepped in at some point in the arc, right?
That's true,
So.
I'll give you credit too, but for your man Morge, I think made a great theory about, or had a great, it wasn't a theory video, but it was a great video about thematically why Kizaru is the most tragic admiral, in the sense that he's someone who just has accepted that he's a cog in the machine, and while his heart's not in it, he's gonna keep just carrying out his orders. So I think
Exactly,
that
exactly.
that
No,
falls in
I
within
like
that.
that video too. But yeah, so my point was that the comparison to Garp is not an accurate comparison, because we can see that Kizaru was not frozen into inaction in the same way that Garp was, right? That he still carried out his task, did his mission. And I understand that your heart wouldn't be like, no one wants to do that to their friends. And he clearly does have very personal relationships with these people. We can see that it's hurting him. But at the same time, he still did his job, was my point. And so I'm not going to just assume that he was holding back when he if he had let someone like Vegapunk get away, then maybe I could argue it. But yeah, so like all of that was why I didn't really believe Kizaru was nerfed in this arc. But I guess it seems that as we get more and more information, like in this latest chapter, where he doesn't really have the will to fight, because I don't think he took so much damage. I don't think he took so much damage that
Wait, no,
he couldn't fight.
get back to finishing that sentence about how you were starting to come around. Get back to
No, I'm on that
that
sense.
now.
He, I don't think he's
Okay,
taken. I don't think he's taken so much damage that he couldn't physically fight. It's just that he's taken damage, he's hurt, and he doesn't have the will to fight anymore because he's just killed one of his friends. And I like if Oda keeps on going down this road, and this is just what we get from Kizaru, then maybe I'll change my mind. I still do feel like he was not holding back in his fight against Luffy, and that's still my opinion right now. But if we keep on getting more information about Kizaru's mindset throughout this arc, then my opinion might change.
I just, I appreciate you saying that, because, I know, it sometimes it can be hard for, the both of us to change our opinions, but it's good to know that you're coming around to the beauty of this opinion. And a last point I'll make too is, I think in the same way when you talk about his heart not being in it, we haven't seen him actually successfully accomplish anything hard while he's carrying out his orders. And when it comes to things like the One Piece world, where willpower and your sort of determination are some of the main things that actually determine how strong a character is, I think that when it comes to things like actually fighting Luffy and how strong Kizaru is actually, I think that's where you're going to see that really manifest. Whereas in things like killing Vegapunk that don't really take much effort, it's just like, I'm just going to shoot this guy from the chest. All right, cool, like whatever.
Okay. I can buy that. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. And you know what else we're going to see what happens is in some S-class and F-class theories. Now, how many you got for me today, Abraham? Because I got two for you.
I only have one, so you go first. Let me hear
Then
it.
I'll go first. Okay, because, I got two today. We're cooking something pretty interesting. I think they're both interesting. One of them I really like, and you're going to know what it is, when, because it's going to be from Uteron. But the
Uterum,
first
okay.
one, that's my dog. The first one is from Marshall D. Preach, who I might have been hating on last time, but I still watched the video. It got me to click on it. And it's that Robin's father, who, according to a One Piece magazine, was a historian who was killed for researching the Poneglyph, had a Poneglyph that had important information that the world government did not even know where it is. And the contents of that Poneglyph are the piece of information that only Nico Olvia knows, And that's why Spandam needed her alive in the O'Hara flashback.
Okay. Can I ask you a couple questions before I give it a ranking?
Ask some questions. I don't. I'm not gonna sit and show them how all the answers, but you ask me some questions.
Yeah. So, is this? I don't remember learn hearing anything about Robin's father, about any secret pony glyph. Is all of this just from like the One Piece magazine, or is this stuff about a secret like pony glyph and the information it contained kind of this person's headcanon?
I believe it's all from the One Piece magazine.
Okay. And I did not remember that Spandam wanted Nico Olvia alive on O'Hara.
Dang,
Is that
bro. Bro, how are you gonna
I
forget that? Because I said that on the podcast like a month ago, bro.
he wanted her alive? I don't know.
Yeah,
I
man.
mean I knew that they wanted to capture them again, but
Remember, that was why I suggested that Olvia is the scholar on is the scholar who's currently on Elbaf was because I went back and reread Robin's backstory, and at some point I think it's Spandam who's saying, we need this, kill everyone except for her. We need her alive because it's a piece of information that only she knows.
Okay, I'll give it an S-class theory. I like this, and I don't think that maybe her Robin's dad has much to play. Like I think you could have this whole theory without him and just be like Nico Olvia has this secret information, but yeah, I like it.
All right, well done, Marshall D. Preach. I
Yeah.
think it's a lot of the video got a little, I mean, when we talk about YouTubers and stuff, a lot of the video got a little extra for me, and there's a lot that it was like a 20-minute video, and I'm like, man, we could have made this a 5-minute video. And I'm
Yeah.
sure that it was that long because of the algorithm, and there's a
Yeah.
reason that these YouTubers are making these videos so much longer. But man, I agree. The theory could have existed without Robin's father. But it's sort of interesting thinking about where her family comes from. What do you
Yeah.
got for me?
So mine is a theory about Emu's past. I think you're gonna hate this theory. I'm trying to remember all of the details about it. So essentially, it's that the Gorosei, right? We see that they're summoned using these kind of pentagram circles, and there's actually like one incident in which we see this pentagram circles being used in the story earlier on, and it's actually when Brook is summoned to that one random island, like when Kuma like blasts the whole crew away and Brook gets sent off to some random island where they're worshiping Satan and they're like they need help. But it was like the long arms and the long legs or whatever. You remember how Brook just randomly appears up in the middle of this summoning circle and they're like, oh my God, it's a being from the underworld. Can you help us in our back? Do you remember that?
I actually totally do not remember that, but I because remember I reread the ones I have and I don't have that one, but I do remember that Brooke I do remember that Brooke became a rock star there.
Yeah, well, so he was summoned. Well, he wasn't sub. Kuma sent him off, right? And he ended up landing in the middle of actually this group of like Satanists or whatever who were doing some kind of worship, or not worship, I guess a ritual in order to get assistance from the underworld in their fight against, I think it was in their fight against the Long Legs. Because I think they were the long arm tribe. That detail might be a little bit off, but regardless, that was the gist of it. And then poof, in the middle of this pentagram, all of a sudden, Brook appears. It's a random skeleton, and they're like, "Oh my God, it's a being from the underworld, right?" And it's kind of funny because it's Brook, and Brook is a fucking skeleton, right? So obviously they think that. But Brook has also been to the underworld and back, and we know, like I was saying last week on our discussion, we know that the underworld is a real place, and that maybe the Gorosei's abilities that we see are related to the underworld in some way. And so this person goes on to theorize that much like Brooke was quote unquote summoned using the summoning circle from the underworld, that maybe these demons that the Gorosei transform into are not like devil fruit powers per se, but an actual like demon from the underworld that they're able to kind of summon into like random spots in the world. Like that essentially like that the Gorosei are these random demons, that Saturn is an Ushioni that can be summoned if you draw that pentagram like anywhere in the world, that they can be summoned directly from the underworld. And
Or
that yeah, and sorry, I'm going on for a little bit because I needed to explain that before he gets into Emu. And then he so what this YouTuber then says is that, well, Emu was maybe the head of the 20 kings, and that he needed assistance in his war, maybe against the ancient kingdom, and that he kind of relied on this, I guess, quote unquote, forbidden power or evil power to like to draw energy from or whatever, with essentially allied himself with these demons in order to overthrow the ancient kingdom, and that they that the what was it? Because I should have written this down. That these demons in the underworld are effectively running the world government, and that Emu doesn't really have much agency as the head of the world government. Like that he might genuinely be like a person who made a mistake and who is now being controlled by these demons from the underworld that are at effectively running the world government and controlling the whole world.
And these demons from the underworld are the elder stars, elder planets, whatever. Nah, man, come on, man, that's crazy, bro. That's an F-class theory, man.
I
Yeah,
agree.
you,
I
man, you
agree.
had to say all that just to get to, you had to say all that just to get to F-class theory, bro. Come on, cuz.
I mean, I tried to give
I
this
needed that to be
theory
an S-class theory. I needed it to be an S-class
I tried to
theory.
advocate for it as well as I could, you know? I really did. But yeah,
Bro,
it was kind of out there.
it's the idea, first of all, the idea that M is just this figure who is being completely manipulated is kind of whack. Like you, we see enough from M to be like, this is a character who has some amount of care or will or some amount of agency over themselves. Now, the idea that there was some kind of like deal with the devil or underworld, I think there's a Euteron video I haven't watched yet about that. And so that part I'm at least like somewhat interested in, but also just even, and I'm interested in rereading the chapter that looks like it's 524 with where Brook gets sent to Namakura Island to see sort of what the potential parallels and what potential foreshadowing might be there. The next theory I have actually is going to mention Tequila Wolf, which is as far as just like places that Kuma sent the Straw Hats. But the idea, like one thing that's worth noting is I don't think that you can just summon the Elder Stars anywhere you want. I think you actually have to have one of them there. There's a reason that Saturn was on the boat with Kizaru, and so he showed up, and then he's like, I'm gonna perform the summoning so we can all show up here. But they can't just be like, we're all gonna be there out of nowhere, is my current guess as to how their powers work.
Yeah,
But the idea that you're
I'm
gonna
on board
take
with
this
that.
villain, the idea that you're gonna take this villain and remove their agency just because of some kind of, you know, deal with the underworld, and then what, we're gonna have to like fight the whole underworld? Like the implications for the story are not interesting. It's an F-class theory.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
I didn't say, I gotta state it strongly, man. I gotta state it strongly, man. But you know, the next thing I'm coming back to you with is from my dog, my guy, Euteron. Now it starts, and this is not a core part of the theory, so don't start rolling your eyes, but I'm just saying that it starts with the idea that Laugh Tail might refer to the tail. No, it's not on the moon, but it might refer to the tail of a whale, because the island has been eaten by a giant whale, and it's being kept in the whirlpool between the gates of justice at Enies Lobby, Marineford, and Impel Down. The being that is actually eaten the island is a similar being to, if you kind of like combine different things we've seen in the past, Zunisha and Laboon, in terms of Laboon being an island eating, like a whale that has an actual island inside of it, but potentially a larger version of that, and obviously Zunisha being something that's been in existence for the last 800 years is one of the old beings that existed, as far as one of the old beings that had existed from the 800 years ago. A few other pieces of information for it. In Japanese, one term they say is that Laugh Tail will ukabi-agaru, which is like to it, on a map you can use it to say like show up, but it also literally means to rise up. So a little bit more evidence that Laugh Tail could actually be underwater. And it provides some interesting implications for what's going on with the ancient weapons, as far as Shirahoshi being able to control Sea Kings, and being able to potentially talk to someone who is holding the island. Additionally, Pluton is under the ocean, and so it could involve reaching Laugh Tail that way. And finally, that would imply that partly why Roger knew that they were too early, because they can't move the island to where it needs to go, and when and why, when he was on Fishman Island, he asked about when the Mermaid Princess would be born. And the final thing to mention is that one thing about Tequila Wolf is that it's an anagram for Rafteru Uki,
Bro,
which is Laugh Tail
bro,
will float, which is Laugh Tail will
bro.
float.
Let me get this straight. There's a whale that is supposed to eat Enies Lobby
Havian. No, no,
that
no,
has.
no, 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 no. It's that the island, or like, it's that within a whale that is not gonna eat those things. It's currently within the whirlpool of the Gates of Justice. That whirlpool exists to keep this whale trapped.
Wow. If I ever heard of, not even, this isn't even like a stretch of a theory. This just seems like someone
Well,
was
you'll
on
see.
LSD and just started like painting something and then ended up with a mess on the wall that they called abstract art. Like, what the hell is this? And then
Well,
you
you'll
hit me
see.
with
Well, you'll see.
you hit me with an anagram at the end.
I'm just saying, I think it means that partly what is going to have to happen is bringing Laugh Tail to the surface of the ocean. Like, it's underwater at this point, and we're going to have to find a way to bring it up.
This is actually crazy. So, yeah, I don't even know where to begin with so the idea is, first of all, Marineford was moved post time skip to the other side of the red line. Now, it's not like the
Now
Marine.
they still got the Gates of Justice though, doing the whole whirlpool type thing.
Okay, but it feels like that would be a significant decision if the world government was actually. Wow, I just thought, if the world government was containing this whale that contained Laugh Tail, or whatever it is, or was Laugh Tail, or I don't even know. That would mean that the world government and the Marines would know about the location of Laugh Tail, which seems absolutely ridiculous to me. I don't think there's any chance that any of them know, that anyone knows about the location of Laugh Tail, or the location of the One Piece. You're telling me that Roger came, went there, left his treasure, the One Piece, in the middle of Enies Lobby, Impel Down, and Marineford, and that, the world government, the Marines, who know it's here, it's in the middle of their territory, are just, leaving the treasure there for anyone to come and stumble upon. No, this is a terrible theory.
I mean,
You
they
had the
said
audacity to be like an anagram of Tequila Wolf. What does
hey,
Tequila Wolf even have to do with any of this?
it's just interesting that it's an anagram for Raft Tail will float, you know? Let's say Raft Tail. Oh my God. Laugh Tail will float.
Ridiculous.
How long did Oda say that it would take Akainu to find the One Piece? He said he could find it in a year. So I was like, I know that we had to do with it being close by or something like that. So
I
if he
mean,
was a pirate, he'd
I
find it
don't
in no
remember him
time.
saying that, but I'll take your word for it.
I think you make a good point as far as it just being there. I think that it is some. Nonetheless, I still think it's interesting imagining what might be at the bottom of the whirlpool. I do like the idea of an island-eating whale as well. Whether or not that is actually at the bottom of the whirlpool in at Enies Lobby, I like the idea of an island-eating whale being related to where the final island is. It seems like something we've had foreshadowing for and have had some amount of like thematic.
It's not something that we've had
We have some amount
foreshadowing
of
for. It's
thematic
something that
consistency.
we've had in the story. Like, it's
Sure.
already
Yeah, yeah,
happened in
yeah. Whatever, whatever. Yes, it's happened. Like it's a hint. It might that you could look back and say there
the
have been hints, and you could demonstrate that the implications of it would be interesting for the story. Man, this man a hater, man. You know I love my dog, Uteron.
Bro,
I'm gonna keep riding with you. I'm gonna
did you
keep
think that
riding
was an
with you.
S-class theory? Did you?
Yep. Bro,
Nonsense. He's
you'll
an
see.
absolute
It's
nonsense.
all I'm saying is Laptop definitely gonna be somewhere underwater. That's all I'm saying. We gonna have to bring it to the surface at some point, but it's definitely gonna be somewhere. It's definitely gonna be somewhere underwater. We have to bring it up to the surface.
It's in the sky. They told you it's in the moon, on the moon.
Okay, it's just definitely not on the moon, bro. It's definitely not on the moon.
Okay. Well, let's talk about something. You're a friendly
Yeah,
guy.
bro. Yeah.
Regardless of how much you get on my nerves from time to time. I feel like you
I
have a
would
lot of
never.
somehow you have a lot of friends. I don't really know how, but you do. Have you found that making friends in your 30s is more difficult? Or different, how different is
No,
it
man,
from making friends
I'm
in your
introducing
20s?
the video. I want to talk about the video that I watched on YouTube that I thought was funny.
Fine,
And
go
then we
introduce it.
talk about
I thought I
that.
could introduce it, but I guess I wasn't. I'm sorry,
I
I
want to talk
wasn't.
about the video. I want to talk about the video itself because I thought it
Okay,
was funny. It's a
go
video.
ahead, talk
It was
about
a
the video.
video making friends in your 20s versus making 20 friends in your 30s. And the dudes in the 20s are just chilling on a couch, drinking beer, talking about making bad financial decisions. And it's like, hey, you're another dude on the couch drinking beer. Oh, hey, let's talk about like Bitcoin or whatever. And yeah, we're gonna be best friends forever. Then in your 30s, it's two guys sitting on a park bench talking about their kids, talking about how they played soccer and their ACLs are, messed up, and they all know these different doctors' names and things like that. And I was like, dang, that. I was like, oh, it's darker and everything too, but that's whatever. I was like, dang, that hair's kind of hard, Like, I might be in my early 30s and I'm on a different side of that too because I am a single guy. I don't have kids. I'm not dating. I'm not married. But I definitely do show up at a lot of different social events. And at those events, it's like, wait, hold up. I'm the only person who doesn't have children here? It's like, my friend Craig's birthday. There were just about 20. They were about 20 children, there, and everyone's parents. And there were about three of us who ended up. Okay, maybe 10, but it was 10 children at least. And there's about three of us just like chilling in the corner, being like, we're the people who don't have kids here. We're gonna talk about, random adult things instead of like watching our kids and like throwing things at them and all that kind of stuff. And it's really interesting thinking about how that becomes the center of people's social circles and just sort of noticing the different kinds of people that we've become and the different social situations we find ourselves in.
Yeah, I guess I'm in the same boat as you in that I'm not at that point in my life. So, and most of the people that I'm around are not at that point in their lives either. The only friend I have that's not the only friend that I have that's married with kids, but like the only friend that I guess I see regularly is somewhat like a lab mate of mine, another grad student in my lab, who's, like 2 years older than me, just had his first son who turned one a couple days ago. And most of his life, like you said, is going to like other children's birthday parties, going to take his like son to the science center, going on, walks and taking them to the park and going to sleep by like 9 a.m. and stuff like that. Or 9 a.m., 9 p.m. But for me, and he's only like 32. I'm 30, right? So it's not like
Right.
there's a massive age gap between us, right? But that's not what my 30s have been like. Granted that my 30s just started. And well, what you're saying kind of comes down to what we talked about last time, right? Which was that there's kind of this expectation for what your 30s will be like that actually seems to be separate from reality for, in my opinion, more people. More people
This
than
one
like it. Yeah.
didn't feel divorced from reality to me, right? Like this one felt very real to me in the sense of like when we get like the standard for me being friends, yeah, okay, I wasn't like guy at a party drinking beer and like you're a guy at a party drinking beer, but definitely the people I would become friends with, I was much looser about it. That's partly why I have so many friends, but it's like I was much looser about it. I was much like, oh yeah, you're just like a dude who seems cool. Let's like become friends and hang out. And then as time goes on, obviously, there's a sense of like realizing the need to be more selective. At the very least, also realizing the need to have some amount of shared things that I spend my time on. And it's just always really interesting to me. Like I find the certain things that I find interesting about aging. It's like when we're all at Holloway's house and we're eating dinner, and it's just like talking about houses and talking about, freaking, I don't know, like random stuff. And it's just like, oh, this like bottle of wine, and like everyone's married, and like it's just like, dang, like I feel in a lot of ways like, dang, we really just became those people. And when did that happen? Like the houses are all nicer, which is like a good thing, but like there's something you miss about having like, close quarters. And I mean, I don't want to live in like, I don't want to downgrade in my house, but like, there's something
Sure.
nostalgic about it.
Sure. But I mean, we also do have conversations about, random video games that we're still playing, or random animes, or just like random shit, right? I agree that there are more adult conversations that happen nowadays than in my 20s, right? But I guess the video that you showed me, and like how these people, like, broken down bodies, and you're kind of like just been
Right.
beaten up by life, like life ba essentially it was that, like you've just been beaten
Right.
down by life by like your mid 20s. And I'm just like, that's not true. I feel like I have more energy and passion to be around people now than I did in my early 20s. Like, in terms of making friends, I feel like I'm better at making friends now than I was in my early 20s, to be honest, because I know myself better. Like, I'm more self-assured, you know what I mean? I know what I like, I know what I don't like, and I'm more comfortable just being myself around people and being genuine. And I think that can come off as charismatic to some degree, right? When you're just self-assured about you, when
Oh,
you're self-assured about
are you
yourself.
charismatic? Are you
I think so.
charismatic?
I think
Hey,
so.
boy,
I think a
I
little
mean,
bit. I think
that guy got that
I'm
charm at the max, man. His charm is like 100, boy.
not saying I have crazy charisma. I'm just saying that in general,
Wait, dude,
I'm fun to be around.
is that where the
And
term riz? Is that where the term
yeah,
riz comes
exactly.
from?
That did you not know that?
Nah,
Did you
no,
actually
dude,
not? You didn't
no
know that?
idea.
Oh
Nah,
my God, Jordan.
dude,
Are you serious?
dude, I just heard people say riz, like, bro, like English
Yeah.
slang just like comes out of nowhere. So I was just like riz, like cool. Like I hear people saying that. I guess that means like someone's swaggy. I can figure that out from the context. He got like mad riz, like whatever. And I heard you say
Oh my God.
charisma, and I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You see, bro, he said, I told you I'm getting older, man. See, you only 30, man. You know about where all the slang comes from, man. I'm 31, bro. I'm a grandpa. I
Bro,
don't know. I'm one
you
of these
should
old
know
guys in the
that.
video, man. I don't even know, bro.
That's crazy. Yes, Riz is short for charisma. My point
Had
is
no
that
idea.
life has not beaten me down. And I feel like in general, like, it's kind of, I mean, it's a video made to make people laugh, right? So it's not meant to necessarily be an accurate depiction of what your 30s are like. But for me, my late tw I'll say my late 20s, because I'm just getting into my 30s, but my late 20s have been in a lot of ways more social than my early 20s have been. Especially since I left my parents' house, I moved to another country, all this other stuff, right? Like, I think part of the reason why that happened is I was kind of on my own when I came here, right? I didn't know anyone. And so I was kind of forced to build up my own social circle. And yeah, I don't know.
Well, hey man, I'm happy for you. The rest of us will just continue getting older and more boring and doing what we can to resist it. I can tell you that I sent it to my sister's fiance, my future brother-in-law, if that's what that makes that, and he was
Yeah.
like, dang, he's like, dang, that hits a little too close to home. But on that note, that's what we have for time. Abraham's musical is later on today, I guess. So, hey,
Yeah,
Abraham, you go ahead.
Tech week is starting today.
Tech
Tech week
week,
is
tech
starting
week.
today. Yeah.
So, hey, Abraham, you break a leg. Everyone wish Abraham the best on his musical. And come back next week to hear us maybe talk about our favorite. It might be our favorite animals in One Piece. It might be our favorite YouTubers. It's gonna be some of those things. But we're gonna fill this break week with some interesting stuff in the meantime and continue to
Absolutely.
be your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking, sharing, and giving us 5 stars and keeping an eye out for our TikTok because that's where the cool kids are right now. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Take it easy, y'all.